darkest corners of the podcast dungeon, you have come across another goddamn horror podcast with Graham Fay, Jonas Barnes, and Ryan Danley.
Welcome, everybody, to yet another goddamn horror podcast. I am one of your hosts. I am Ryan Danley, coming to you from Portland, Oregon. I'm not going to talk about the weather. Good. Do you know what I'm going to talk about?
What are you going to talk about?
I want to hear.
I watched a thing about a wrestler today.
Oh, my God.
Yes.
Oh, my God.
I'm happy about this.
For the first time in my life. No, it was a great documentary, and it was incredibly sad. The Bray Wyatt documentary that just came out on Peacock.
Becoming immortal.
And it was, I knew that it was going to be sad, but I didn't think I'd be that sad, because I didn't, you know, as our listeners know, I am not the wrestling guy on this podcast.
We are Jonas and Graham.
But Graham and Jonas, all about that life. And that dude seemed pretty rad. He was super creative. I liked his brother a lot. Like, I liked his brother, the interviews. I liked it. And kind of brutal. 36. Goddamn. I know wrestlers die young a lot, and there's probably specific reasons for that, but it was a really sad, sad deal. And shout out to Bray Wyatt for interesting and such a creative mind. You know what I mean? Like,
he was so creative that the company was like, all right, you gotta fucking calm it down.
Like, he was too creative.
They were like, we can't actually work with that because that's a movie. Like, that's not, you can't put that on wrestling.
Also super cool, we had two of the two people in that documentary on the show.
Yeah, we had Jason Baker, one of our one of our favorite guests of all
time.
Who's
Bray's best friend, by the way.
Yep.
His whole part of that documentary, man. Whew.
And we had Jason Baker on when Bray was still alive, you know, and and then we also had Eric Redbeard, Rowan or whatever the hell is. What was his name with
In WWE, he was Eric Rowan.
Okay. When he was with Bray, he was
Eric. Yeah, when he was with the Wyatt family.
Eric Rowan, yeah.
Yeah,
okay.
Yeah.
Okay. Anyways, so we had two. So I feel like we were kind of part of the documentary. They should have
talked to us.
In a
roundabout way.
Anyways, how's Brooklyn, Graham, and Jonas?
Great. I mean, it was rainy as fuck today.
Really?
I watched the documentary yesterday. So today I had a recovery day, because I don't know if you know that me and Graham also shared the absolute adoration of Bray Wyatt. Like, we both loved him like dearly as a character. So I watched it yesterday, and today I was like, I'm just gonna lay in bed. Like, I'm not going outside. Then it was raining and stuff, so I was like, nope, no thanks.
It was a rough watch. I went as Bray during his hillbilly cult period three times in a row for Halloween. Like, that dude was just like my idol in wrestling, just because his mind was so dark and amazing. Anyway, speaking of dark and amazing, we have a fucking really cool show tonight. So we get a lot of movies from out of nowhere. We weren't looking for them, but they pop up, and sometimes we'll learn more about it, sometimes we'll learn a little more and then just forget about it. This one popped up in my email, in our email, and it had something to do with a vampire movie, but also Bambi. And as everyone knows, I love taking childhood loved things from childhood that people love and destroying them, and I'm not sure if this does that, but it reminded me of that. And so I spoke with some of the creators about coming on the show, and they sent me a sizzle reel that fucking blew my mind. And it was for a movie called Vampire. So Bambi Vampire. But today we have Zoe Lawson and Malachite Sakuya from where, Oregon? Yeah.
Yes, sir. Eugene, Oregon. What's up, guys?
How's it going? Guys.
Now, before the, you know, yes, we are both in Oregon, but I'd say Eugene and Portland are mere hours apart, but sometimes kind of worlds apart too. Would you agree with that?
Oh yeah, Portlandia came out and I feel like you guys just went global. And Eugene was like here on the coattails, like
right.
We're kind of like that. Yeah,
kinda, a little smaller, a little less, you know,
right.
Interesting in our own right, but also we've got like a lot of weird niches. We're definitely like small Portland.
It's right. So you know how Portlanders feel about Portlandia, right?
I don't actually. I'm 2 hours away, but
we absolutely hate it. it's actually
you guys are big, you know?
Right, but it's actually like to the point where Fred Armisen like had to kind of leave is what I hear, because it is really blamed. Voodoo Donuts, the Pink Box Donuts in Portlandia are really blamed for like the California, you know, whatever the gentrification with all the prices going up and everything. Because Portland used to be like the most affordable city on the West Coast and like was kind of like a quiet little town, and that place kind of blew it up. And then they all of a sudden all that stuff happened and people thought it looked cute. Everybody wanted to move here. They started tearing down buildings and houses and closing old school stuff to open, you know, boutiques and crap. You know what I mean? And like, and it just didn't vibe. So whether or not Portlandia was actually the responsible party for that, we don't give a fuck. We just blame it. When it first came out, we all thought it was funny for about 2 days, and then we all were like, "Nope, get out!" You know,
I personally blame Danzig on the beach part of Portlandia, yeah. Because then they were like, "Okay, you guys fucking have Danzig on the beach, like we have to move there." Right. Well, I mean, that guy lives in castles.
He's it on almost the beach got there. Me there. Like,
Ben has been going up in Eugene for like ever since Portlandia came out too. So yeah. I think you guys might be on to something.
Yeah,
it was the residual. Like, yeah. Yeah.
It was really like all of a sudden, and now we're like, it's so expensive to live here, and you know what I mean. And I live in North Portland, which they have yet to do a Portlandia skit about. You know, where somebody on a stolen mountain bike steals your tools out of your garage. You know what I mean? That's a little ode to Eugene.
I want to mention this though, because the last time I went to Portland, I mean, it's been a while, but the last time I went to Portland, I still got to see the cool Portland shit that I missed, you know, because I was like, I was literally born in Portland, born homeless in Portland, by the way. So I'm a fucking OG, but like, I feel like I'm like the most OG Portland for that case. But last time I went there, there legitimately was a dude in like Lederhosen riding a fucking gigantic wheel bicycle, just right down the road, had a speaker attached to his back. Yeah. None of it was properly together, but it worked so well. I was like, fuck yeah, Portland. I remember that. All right. That dude doesn't care at all. And I love it.
So anyway.
Well, okay. So my first question with Vampire is, what the hell is Vampire?
Ooh, Ken, yeah. Let's go. Vampire is a film that we created the concept for together, and Zoe wrote. It is a love letter to like a bunch of 90s and also 80s horror films that we just came up on. It's got a really like retro nostalgia feel, so we try to bring the audience back to the 1997, and we're playing with a lot of just like old media, old physical media being switched out. Like there's cassettes in your car, but then now you have a Walkman too, and you got your your CDs. And so it's a really fun, really youthful, really kind of classic horror film in its own way of that's really what it's all about. And then the whole Bambi plus vampire comes in as like the final coloring, the final flavor that goes on top of just that, really, like I said, that love letter, that nostalgic kind of vibe that we put together.
Yeah, like for a lot of like the stuff that we've included to create this like kind of multimedia piece of artwork, you know, going with practical effects and doing all of that, you know, with the gelatin, the corn syrup, everything that you could freaking hope for and more, and not using CGI and not faking it, you know, really trying to achieve these things with very little money, but a lot of heart and a lot of drive and a lot of adaptation. And one of the ways, and one of the most, like, you know, 80s, 90s parts of our film, one of the ways that we've adapted to be able to have all of the crazy shit in our movie that we have is actually by doing a half animated look. So if anyone's ever seen Who Framed Roger Rabbit, we actually have like 2D hand-drawn animation interacting with live action performance.
Wow.
Which, like, awesome.
Right. We did that shit for the same reason that you would have done that in the 80s and 90s, because we can't afford to do it any other way.
Right.
And back then, CGI wasn't what it is now. And so for us, we had a decision to make. You know, we've got all these animals. We've got a ton of stunts, but no stuntmen. How do we achieve? Well, we got one stuntman.
I did all the stunts.
This guy. Nice. It's risked his life for vampire. Like,
I love it. I love that you said, you know, like going indie and still going for all like the practical and like doing exactly what you want. Like the heart behind that makes a film. And it makes it better than anything that's released in theaters from a major studio. I mean, I'm always about indie. And just to hear that that's like the passion behind it is fucking rad.
Yeah, we wouldn't let the door go. We were like, we can't do all cartoon. We gotta make someone bleed.
You guys are doing throwbacks to like the 90s and like the late 80s and stuff like that too. Like that's video store times, you know? Like that's the stuff where you go and you find the cool shit. Like you go you found like the really, there was like, it was this weird time period that happened between the late 80s and the 2000s where you had like this early 90s was still like kind of the 80s stuff, but then like that middle to late part of the 90s was kind of a cool sweet spot of horror where you would just have all this stuff that would like not really hit theaters, but you'd be like fucking with the video stores and you'd find all these things and you're just like, oh, this is so cool. Like there was this whole generation of people that fell in love with horror because of that time period.
And exactly. You know,
which is what I think you guys, just based off of what you just said, it sounds like all that heart is in there and I can't wait for this. Like I'm already in.
Yeah, dude. Like I grew up in rural Alaska, so I lived in like a tiny village in the middle of fucking nowhere. So ultimately, like I had no internet, I had no media being like transported to my town other than what was stocked in that video store, and I was in there every day, you know. And so, like,
hell yeah,
they never had anything new. I mean, everything new came out like 3 years ago by the time that we got it up there. Like, so yeah, like that's exact. Those shelves of films. That's what I've dedicated Vampire to. It's like that's what raised me in a big way.
Oh,
I love that. Love that so much.
So much.
Were you disappointed by the most recent season of True Detective's inability to actually use a Alaska village, and they used a place that doesn't look like an Alaskan village at all?
I mean, the few pieces of media that get made in Alaska, like for real, I'm like, what the fuck are you guys doing? Because it's the most brutal place in the world,
right.
And so hard to travel to, and like bring. I'm like, what kind of budget must you have? So like. As an indie filmmaker, I'm like, you do you, boo. I get it.
Right. No one needs to go
up there. I don't even want to go up there now.
Yeah, I mean, I know that HBO struggling for cash flow, but I thought they could have just done a little bit better creating like an actual like Alaska village, because I have close people to me from Alaska, and they were like, it just looks nothing like an Alaskan village, and that's like, and so they could barely watch it because they were like, it took me out of it so much that it was like, because I think they filmed it in Greenland or somewhere like that, or Iceland, something like that. Yeah,
okay. Well,
Greenland's the icier.
Well, maybe if I saw it, I'd be like,
You should watch it. It's
a real disservice when you can't make something like grounded in enough realism to really just do service to that part of the world that you're trying to tell a story about in the first place.
I hate to be like this, but I think there might be something to it. Like, I like the show. What's the Alan Tudyk alien show?
Resident.
I love the show, but I lived in Colorado as a kid, and it's so clearly not filmed in Colorado because it looks nothing like Colorado. It looks nothing like Colorado trees. It looks nothing like. So I kind of feel like at some point we have to say, you know what? just say everything's in Vancouver, BC. Okay, just make it Vancouver. Like, it wouldn't take away from the story if it was in Vancouver, BC. We get it. I've been to Vancouver a handful of times, and it's beautiful there. So I don't know why we can't have stories there. Anyways, get it.
There's some movies that get it right, though. I think, like, you know, like one of Ryan's favorite ones, 30 Days of Night. Like, that looked and felt like Alaska. Like, that was, you know, like, and phenomenal movie. And then, like, even one of Christopher Nolan's early ones, Insomnia, the one with Al Pacino and Robin Williams.
Yeah.
That was one of his early movies, and that one's also based in Alaska. It's the whole idea of it is that Al Pacino's detective character literally can't sleep because the sun never goes down. Mm. So it's like it builds this whole thing. And then, like, when you look at it, you're like, oh, that actually looks like Alaska. But there's been a bunch of movies that I've seen where, like, you can't get the setting right. Like, if you guys filmed your movie in Eugene, right?
Yeah, this bitch is really done where we said it was. Literally.
Yeah.
Awesome. And right that immersion, outside. Like, that immersion with, like, it being in the 90s was also really important to us. Like, if we were going to try to make an era-accurate piece, then we didn't want to, like, go halfway and be like, yeah, everyone's wearing, like, three colors and, you know, some tall socks or whatever, and it's the 90s. And because I see so many modern movies do that, and they have way more of a budget than we do, and so that decision of, like, can we achieve this was really promoted by our director Taylor Morden, who's a huge nostalgia guy. I mean, like, he made the last Blockbuster documentary, so he was a big, you know, he had a big eye on the culture as it stood, but also went to college in the 90s. I mean, he was a part of that time, and so he was a huge guide for us. Like, as much as we, you know, did our research and went into it, you know, as best we could, that's not when we went to college. And so having that person who was so directly, you know, a part of, you know, every piece of this, he was a producer, he was the director, he brought, like, such a depth of knowledge to the music, to the technology, to who, you know, if you were rich, you'd have this, but if you were poor, you'd still have this. You know, there's so much intricacy to it that's one thing that, like, you know, you'll have to judge it for yourselves, and I'll accept the criticism, but I'm pretty stoked on how it's turned out, and that I really think we'll be able to give people that feeling of, like, wow, this is a community college in the 90s, even though it's really just the basement of the theater building in a very modern community college in the 2020s.
although it is Eugene, so it could still feel kind of 90s.
We did buy a payphone.
Did you have to buy a payphone? Huh? There's actually one down the street. It's not an actual pay. But the shell of one is still North Portland. North Portland, we don't get rid of shit because nobody ever knows to take it away.
$500
Yeah, I could have run it. I could have driven it down there. Next time, let me know.
I thought I caught one of those, like, cool Discman flips too. Like, on the side, like, spin flip, like, that shit was hot. I like that a lot.
We're like, whoa, cool.
With that little moment, we're still trying to decide whether or not the music is gonna, like, skip for a second. Like,
oh, nice.
Was a modern enough disc man? It's up for debate.
I love it. Not only, I'm not gonna push you too much for details on the plot because I want to go in with as little as possible because that's my favorite way, but you have a pretty rad cast.
Yeah.
You've got some names up there. You've got the godmother of this podcast, Diane Franklin.
Yeah. I love Diane so much.
And Greg Sestero from The Room played Mark.
The king of indie.
Yeah, that's amazing. So can you tell us about, like, how you got them and working with them and stuff?
So it helps. It very much helped for us to get connected with Taylor Morden because he's got those sort of connects and an agent and various like direct connections. So anyway, we reached out to a lot of people because we knew that we were pretty obscure trying to make this film that, like, we had a great script for and we believed in, but it's Taylor's first narrative film as well as ours, or our first narrative feature. We've all done a bunch of shorts, but yeah, we spread our net really wide. And I honestly think the people who showed up are just like the realest motherfuckers out there who just have been like down in the trenches. They've made horror films, they've made indie films, and they, I think they just saw the passion and kind of us as maybe like a, just a new wave of part of what they were involved in when they were getting started as artists. And
oh, that's a good rub right there, actually.
Yeah.
It's just humbling. We also got Lloyd Kaufman involved with the project.
Yeah,
we right. love Lloyd.
That's Diane so
Franklin
cool.
especially. Diane Franklin, she's so cool because she kind of like, you know, like Graham said, she's kind of the godmother of this podcast, you know. And also she's like, she's down. Like, she's down to have fun with movies. Like,
yeah.
And you know, if you got something that she's going to enjoy, she's like, she seems like she's almost always down to be like, yeah, let's make some art, you know. Let's like make mm-hmm. some cool stuff.
Yeah, so, seriously. Yeah, she showed up and was just like such an inspiring presence. I mean, that's like one of the things I can't thank them enough, you know, and I can't tout it enough that like they really showed up and they didn't just like, they didn't lower themselves to our level. They actually brought the whole energy of the production up a notch just because they, you know, brought in that love and that excitement for us, you know, and to have like, great, you know, we're all fucking intimidated when we meet Greg Sestero. Like, we're all having meetings the night before, like, gosh, he's like the biggest star that we've ever had around here, you know, so far. So how are we gonna know what we're supposed to do? Can I like ask him for an autograph? Like, we don't know how to handle ourselves, large in part. When but when, you know, he's sitting there like, hey, like 20 years ago I was on set, or 15 years ago I was on set filming Best Friends, and we had four people, you know, including me, who was in the movie. And you guys have, yeah, like only 12 people all running around trying to make this thing work right now. And you don't even realize like how much of a privilege it is to even just have an actor sit out and just not have to be on set moving things around in independent horror.
Yeah, sure.
It's such a different kind of movie making. It's such a different style of movie making than you find in the rest of the industry, for a good reason, for many reasons. It is not the same. That it really helped to like hear from someone who had been a part of it and even had less than we did. And yet here they are with people like us giving us that extra boost, you know, that maybe their project literally didn't have. And now they actually can offer that up to someone who's starting just like them, you know, and give us that encouragement that makes all those 12 people who've been in the rain for 4+ hours think to themselves, wow, we're doing pretty good.
Right.
You know? Yeah, this might be worth it.
This is just kind of how it is. You know what I mean? I'm like, you got to think like how many great people came from that. And I mean, like, you think Renee Zellweger, you know, Matthew McConaughey. Like, I mean, you can go down to Johnny Depp. You know what I mean? Like, all these people were in all of these movies. Kevin Bacon.
Jennifer Aniston was in the first Leprechaun.
Yeah, exactly. You know what I mean?
Like, I thought it was the second one.
It's the first one.
You know, so it's don't question Jonas on Leprechaun.
We what about Troll 2? Who was in Troll 2? Somebody famous was in Troll 2, right?
Leprechaun, not Troll.
No, I know. I'm saying Troll 2.
Oh, I don't know the famous person in that one.
Sorry, I don't know. I'm out.
So I mean,
I'll
so,
see
like,
myself out.
Yeah. So to keep that there, keep that idea in is great, and then to have like veterans, like I mean, like Diane Franklin was in, you know, she was in Bill and Ted's, you know, big, you know what I mean, like you know what I mean,
Excellent
like,
Adventure.
Yep.
Yeah.
and you know what I mean, and all the
Better Off Dead, fucking Freddy's Amityville, too.
Amityville, yeah, like
oh yeah. She's been doing a lot of horror recently.
She's
like
an incredible actor.
Yeah, we've hit her at a part in her career that is really kind of cool.
Yeah, she's been. We actually, she came on with her daughter and her daughter's partner, and to push a movie that all three of them were in. And then she sent us Jake Jolly, who we're big friends with, who does the Clay Zombies movies, and which is super fun. And yeah, and every time I feel like I turn around, she's in a new indie film. Horror. So
you know, it's funny with the indie horror, what the indie horror thing that you were talking about too on this, like this is something that just happened like just in our own little microcosm that we have with the podcast and everything, with people just, you know, that we're friends with and guests and stuff. But I just saw like Heather Buckley, she was just mentioning how it's $500, just $500 just to get a site, just to get a location license in New York.
Permit, yeah.
Yeah, just to get a permit. $500 just to get a permit, and that's only if you have to put sticks on the ground. they charge you $500, which is insane. But then right after that, I was like, that explains why Larry Fessenden, who is like one of the godfathers of indie horror, does guerrilla filmmaking. He'll just straight up grab a camera and he'll just go film some shit and then he'll fuck off in 5 minutes. He'll just be like, I'm doing this and I'm getting out. And they'll be like, you gotta leave. He's like, I already got the tape. Fuck you, I'm out.
You know? That's the kind of energy you need, honestly. Sometimes you have just that much time, or you have one day, or you've secured, you've got the permit, you're there legally, but if you don't finish in that 8 hours, your actors leave the next day.
Yeah.
So, like, it, as much as you can, that was being first-time feature film producers, it was a big wake-up call during pre-production, just how many moving parts there are to something like this. And I will say that as much as we could mitigate, our team faced probably one massive, like project may fail level of like disaster issues every single day that we were like during principal photography. No matter how long we planned, we spent a year planning this thing. And every day there was something that was world ending. And like, and I'm not even being facetious. It was like the site has double booked a wedding. On top of like us trying to film a horror movie where there's nudity and yelling and cussing and there's like fucking kids around setting up the freaking altar. And we're like, what are you doing here? Like, we're about to like kill someone.
I'm about
right
to take
there.
My dick out in this next
And like, we had something like that happen every day. And we only filmed for 3 weeks. Yeah. We filmed this whole movie in 3 weeks because that's what we could afford. We were flying in actors. We were bringing in people like Diane. But yeah, so I mean, it was crazy. The amount we really had to problem solve.
Now, as somebody who hates weddings, like I would be like, it's me sitting through a wedding is like something burrowing into my skull. Like if I never go to another wedding, it will be way too soon. And like. And so, but if I went to a wedding and they were filming Vampire in the background and Malachi walked by with a sock on his dick, I would be like, this is the single greatest moment of my life.
Yeah, this is the best wedding.
This is the best wedding that's ever existed because this is like, it was kind of like when Will Smith slapped Chris Rock at the Oscars. Now, a lot of people had opinions on that, and I'm like,
you bring that up a lot.
Well, because you're missing the point. There was a fist fight at the Oscars. That's
amazing.
That that's the best thing ever.
At the MTV Awards, they're backstage and shit.
Yeah, exactly.
The fact there was a fist fight at the Oscars is the most punk rock thing that has ever happened at the Oscars.
It's so good.
In the history of the Oscars. And then he has to sit back down for the rest of the show.
Oh my
that
God.
Was amazing.
Yeah. Like, what? This is a literal reality TV show. Like, the fact that they filmed the whole thing, no one said it.
Yeah.
Thing he kept posting afterward.
Yep.
It's like, it's just incredible to me. And just so you guys know, we gave the bride and groom vampire hats. So
okay, cool. Hell yeah. Good job.
Well, you bring up the fact that it was like a disaster almost daily. And I think that's why like there's so much enthusiasm and passion and excitement that's come off. And it's a lot of the reason why I've been so excited just to talk to you guys, but like that comes off in your emails and your socials and everything. You're like, yo, like this almost didn't get made. We are so fucking excited about it. Plus it's rad.
Yeah, so, it turned out. Like we literally took this bet and we're like, maybe this thing falls apart. Like we'd never filmed with some of these actors before. Like we had a really great crew of local filmmakers that we knew were willing to step up, donate a huge percentage of their time, you know, give us, I mean, we had the bare minimum of people, but they all showed up, you know, they all showed up 150%. So, yeah, I mean, we definitely didn't know what was going to happen. We didn't have enough money to fix it if it went wrong either. It was like we hedged, I mean, our entire personal savings on this thing. And I've worked since I was like 10 years old. So it was significant for my, definitely at this age and at this point in my life, it was a huge risk. And if I hadn't had the four producers that we had on board, I couldn't have done it. But yeah, like the fact that it turned out, we are fucking stoked.
Yeah. I mean, it was crazy.
Awesome.
To try and shoot a feature film in 3 weeks is ridiculous. Mm-hmm. Don't do it.
Don't do it.
You'll probably fail.
We should have failed.
There was something way on our side. And on top of that, like, everybody there was just so inspired that like these catastrophic failures would occur, but then 30 people would all problem solve them and work twice as hard for the rest of the day just so that it could not ruin that shooting. Yeah. But we didn't have a single day of reshoots. Like, we didn't have sort of
we had no room to
fail on any one of these days of production. And it was pretty insane. Like it, the fact that it went as well as it did is something that we are definitely, definitely really thankful for and really proud of. And it's just, it's a testament, you know, to like, hey, we didn't have as many resources, but we did have the passion. And at this point, as an independent filmmaker, when we are up against $1 million budget films, that's kind of like the one little blessing in disguise there is that, well, we don't have a dollar to waste, you know? So there's no like corporate greed and there's no inefficiency that can even possibly be built into our plan. Like it's very boots on the ground. Every single person is giving all they have and there's not a lazy or like uninspired person on set. And something about that I think really is going to bring some pretty sick power to like this new age of indie filmmaking once people just get a little better at actually making a film, because it's stupid hard. It's
stupid hard. Right, yeah. It takes like practice, and practice is expensive. Like as a screenwriter, you need like 20 people to bring this piece of artwork to life. It is it's not a novel. It's not like a short story I can just hand you and be like, there it is. It's like, no, the real testament to whether that's a successful document is whether it's told better visually than it does on page, you know. Right. Otherwise make it a book, you know.
Sure.
And don't waste 25 people's time, get it published.
Right.
But like, you know, that's the point for a screenwriter is I've made this, but I've made a story that's told visually. I have to put it on paper so I can shop it to people, and but it's not the end product. In fact, it's step one.
Sure.
Exactly. That's so fucking cool.
I have one question that's like my only real interviewee kind of question, and I have to ask it. You guys filmed a feature length horror film about a vampire Bambi in Eugene, Oregon. So the question is, which one of you guys got just the right amount of high to stop and go, hey, I have an idea? And then that's the question, because that feels like I want to know how the idea came up.
For a long time we called it Deer Pyre.
I'm glad you sat on it.
We realized that there's a real animal called musk deer, and definitely at some point was high thinking about musk deer and just like, these things could be vampires. They're just hiding from us, you know, in plain sight too.
I love it.
It made us on this whole thing of like maybe saber-toothed tigers were once shapeshifter vampires too, like anything with fangs maybe. And that was the birth of the concept from step one.
Yeah, we lived in this place that's like totally surrounded by trees and wilderness, and so we've had a lot of instances where like a deer jumps out in front of our car, or we're just like driving, you know, to our houses or whatever, and you know, get staring at you like, you gonna fucking hit me, bro? You know, and you're like, I'm not, you know, you got me, you know?
No.
And so it was that moment of like, what if that thing was jumping in front of your car so you swerve, so you crash, so it can drink your blood? And it's not like a prey. Oh, it's really the predator.
Right.
And so it was kind of this kind of like turning it on its head, taking something that is so innocent and even painted as like the wide-eyed doe, you know?
Yeah.
You're in the headlights and turned into, well, who's swerving, bro?
I fucking love it.
Yeah, I absolutely love it. And it's a, like everybody loves a fun animal, like, what was it? Slaughterhouse came out, you know, and like, right. I think everybody,
sheep. Yeah.
but everybody likes it. You know what I mean? Like it's a full on, like it's a full
Feature, feature.
Yeah, exactly. Everybody needs that in their life, and I think as like a, like to me, that's where the rubber hits the road with horror movies in general. Is like I like all horror movies. I'll watch them eat a pie for 20 minutes in the ghost movie, or whatever that movie's called. I will watch, you know, some serious stuff or gore or stuff like that, but like a fun movie with like a monster deer. So, yeah. You know what I mean? Like, that's, we need this in our lives. You know what I mean? Like,
so yeah. What kind of movies influenced Vampire, and what did you grow up on?
Yeah. Like, I was just about to bring up American Werewolf in London because it has such a great, you know, creature transformation sequence. And I have to say for myself, and even though we were doing this at such a low budget, I didn't want to hide everything. I wanted to do it creative, and you have to find different ways that you're like, oh, well, this is why you can't see that happening, but you can see this happening. And that's actually where a big part of our found footage element happens. So we actually have a character with an in-world VHS camcorder who's like recording for an investigative journalism class. And that's like partly why he's on this field trip. So I guess that's a bit of a plot for you.
I saw him in the sizzle reel that you sent, which is just so good. But like, I know that Graham said that, but I'm going to repeat it. The sizzle reel is so amazing. And, but then I saw the big camcorder, and that's when I knew, I'm like, okay, this is like, I guess a period piece. Like it's a 90s piece. I, you know what I mean? Like I knew it from the tool. So awesome.
And we actually film on film. Like we're not putting like a filter on footage and just filming him with the camera. It's like, no, we filmed those scenes on a VHS camcorder. Some of it's even filmed by the actor, and some of it's filmed by Taylor, who has been filming with a camcorder since he was in high school. Like he used to film sporting events. So his tracking, I mean, it's like, it's, you know, the muscle memory of it is just so like deep for him that footage has turned out really, really cool. And it's so, a big part of how we did, you know, just some of these moments of like the chaos and then something happens, because we had to get creative when we were making this piece of artwork and trying to figure out how we can show, you know, what is the equivalent of a transformation sequence happening in a well-lit room in a wide angle, like in American Werewolf.
Right.
Like, yeah. How do you do that with no money, no robotics, no Rick Baker?
We tried.
You know? Oh, you didn't have Rick Baker? Oh, that's too bad.
He was one of the first emails we sent out.
Yeah, just
hopeful. That's awesome.
We were young hopefuls. But
yeah.
No, it's good.
That was like a huge inspiration for me. It was like, hide nothing. Try to get the highest amount of creature transformation and the nitty gritty while using these other tools like the VHS camcorder, like the 2D animation to kind of help ease the transitions to fill in where we just can't, because we don't have the money or we don't have the stuntman or we don't have, you know, a million more dollars.
Right. Yeah. Like,
so the more dollars does help.
It does,
you know.
Oh, it helps.
I think we wanted to make a movie that felt kind of like Scream, or like a slightly less self-aware Cabin in the Woods. Like just a really fun, you know, the humor is part of it. The sort of youthful ensemble is a big part of it. Almost like The Descent is coming to my mind, where it's like a lot about what these people are dealing with in their lives. And then they go into the setting of horror and they're all interesting enough to kind of wonder about and what's horror going to now bring out of them.
Right.
Character development. Yeah, it's rare, but
when it's done, it's
a rare.
I just want it, you know. I love
Zoe is a really good writer. So the dialogue is really fresh and really believable, and all of the acting, you know, in Vampire is like really top-notch acting. And it was easy to do that because it was such a beautifully written script that just had little, you know, every character has that little bit of truth to them that's really easy to latch on to, and then there is growth to play with throughout their stories. So those are the films that come to mind when I think of like, oh, what's the style we are shooting for.
Well, I fucking love it.
Yeah, all of those movies are the raddest. So yeah, you're listing movies. I love Scream. I love the Descent, and I love the idea about Actually, I just watched it again for the 100 millionth time, and it was going to be one of my recommendations today, but I will jump the gun on that. But I just rewatched Train to Busan again, and and really, like, what makes that movie so great, because it's like in my top five favorite movies of all time in any genre, and it is because you actually care about the characters, like, that you actually like. It's like, I, you know, like, even in Dawn of the Dead, which you get a lot of time with the characters, when they die, like when Flyboy dies, you're not like, oh, that sucks, you know what I mean? Like, there's not, like, they haven't built sympathetic characters that, like, are real humans with, like, depth and humanity and all of that stuff to them, where, like, in Train to Busan, somehow in that movie they're able to, like, when people die in that movie, when the sister dies, when the working class dude dies and everything, it sucks. You know what I mean? It's heart wrenching. And you're like, oh, no, maybe this time he won't die. You know?
Yeah.
What I mean?
Yeah, totally. And for how much you don't see that a lot of the time in the horror genre, not hating, it's just a reality.
No, some movies don't need it. So, yeah.
No, but so many, like, in reality, like, when you watch someone die and you care about them, it hurts more.
Yeah, exactly. You know,
and that's a big part of why I wrote Vampire the way that I did, to introduce these people in the way that I did, so that you care. And you, like, there's a big part of, like, that I think that horror could use more of, where it's like, wow, you take the time, you know, give yourself a plot, give yourself that first act,
right?
You know, to just make us really fall in love with these people. Because otherwise, in the end, if they're all slated for death, you know, then the ideal is to cause us the most pain possible.
Right.
You know, what's especially, like, good to hear that from you guys is the fact that you guys both came from, like, short films, because that's a lot of times something that tends to be a handicap for someone that makes a short film and then develops a short film into a feature length thing, where it's just like, instead of making the feature length movie something that has more depth or has more character development or makes you care, it's just like, no, you just fucking stretched a 20 minute movie into 90 minutes
Yeah,
exactly. So it's like, you know, if you're gonna, so, like, the fact that you guys are saying that you guys are passionate about that character development and, like, fleshing out who it is that's actually on screen, so you do give a fuck when they die, or, like, you know, like, it's not just a body count, that makes me even happier. It makes me even more stoked for the movie.
Like, this is so quickly becoming my most look forward to movie.
Yeah, for real.
Yeah, thank you guys. And as much as it doesn't sound like it, yeah, like, Vampire, as much as the title might not make you think, like, Vampire is a real piece of art. It really is. It really has that level of intention and heart and passion and creativity, and even, like, not preachy at all, but message put into it, where it's, like, been treated with that much care instead of just putting together a movie that, you know, people will pay to see because of, you know, some of the more flashy elements. It's
right.
It's something that we put all the love into.
Yeah, and we
fucking
we
love it.
We want to watch it. Mm-hmm. You know, that was, like, a really big thing. Was, like, our whole gang was like, well, what if we never get to do all of these practical effects the way that we've seen all of these movies that we loved, you know, being done? Like, when do you have that excuse, right? And when we decided, like, we had this great team of producers, we had a director lined up, and he was just really enthusiastic about the project. We had an amazing cast of people. We even had a few of our locations, like, at a discount lined up. Like, we were ready to go, but we had no money. And so it really came down to, like, hey guys, you know, it may be that we all accept deferred payment, and when this movie makes money, if it makes money, you're getting a chunk of that pie. But until then, like, is it enough to just have the want to do it?
Right.
You know, is it enough if you're taking PTO and you're taking time away from your family? And, you know, is this the story that we want to tell? And for our local film community, this, I think, had enough just dimension to it and story to it. And the fact that we had pulled in these amazing, talented people to really tell it on screen for us, our lead ensemble is just incredible. And they're all, for lack of a better word, amateur actors. They have careers, they're pursuing them, they're up and coming, but it's not like we have an all-star cast. They're just really, really talented individuals. But that takes an amount of belief. Like, you can see a great audition, which are all over our Instagram page if you haven't seen them, and they were amazing. But you don't know until that person is running down that hill or spraying blood out of an arm that is not theirs whether or not they're going to really deliver, you know? And everyone did. I mean, that was the crazy part, is that from the moment that we saw the auditions from the people that we cast, we knew they were the people to portray that role. And Eugene has some freaking amazing actors. Malachite is one of them. He is incredible. And I've worked with him on multiple projects now. Never fails to disappoint. But it was one of those moments where we really needed to reach outside for that to get a cast that really was... We have actors who are very capable. We wouldn't have even tried if we didn't think that we could potentially cast locally. But it's not just about being capable. It's being right for the role. And so reaching out and trying to find all of those people who are really going to make it worth our cruise time, right? Like, you're out there and you're putting the camera on, you put the prosthetic on. And again, it sprays all that blood. But if the person underneath it isn't delivering, you know, this is a quote from our practical effects artist, Trista Kelly. If they're not delivering, it doesn't matter how good that effect is. It matters who's on, you know? And that was, you know, for everyone involved, I think as we were creating it, it really felt like, God, if we could make one thing, this is kind of what we all wanted to do. And that was, that spirit of it really did push us to find, and just made us find every resource that we needed, even if it was like, we have one audio guy, we have one other or two other camera guys. So, but
our on set, like our audio engineer on set, he got sick for a day in the middle of it all, and we literally had a PA who we had met day one run audio on that next day. Like, that's how we were that short, like we were that close to just having not enough crew members to make this thing run, that every single one of them showed up like crazy. And you know, people were out in the woods for like 14 days straight, you know, more than that, probably 16 days straight, you know, getting stung by bees and like falling down in the tall grass and
sunburns.
It was brutal. It was crazy. Like, I don't know that when we set out to do it, I don't know that we realized how hard it would be. And going back to do it again, you know, I don't know if we could have had that sort of crazy itch of like, I think we can make this happen, you know, if you really know how hard it's going to be.
Yeah.
But the passion just made us rise to every occasion, even when it turned out to be harder than we expected. We just kept, you know, rising to the occasion and staying late or whatever the adaptation needed to be.
Mm-hmm. And it really does help that everyone loves the independent part of it.
You got to start with a good script. Yeah. Like y'all were talking about with the short films and then trying to stretch them out. When you make a script for a screenplay, you got to assume it would have to be the most perfect version of the world for the script to go 100% well. You got to probably assume that something's going to fail. Something's going to be not interpreted as well as you had hoped.
Sure.
So you got to start with 110% screenplay that's way better than the story you even want to make, you know, and then, then you try like 80% of that and it's a really good movie. But if you're trying to like pretend like your script is all that, or stretch your script out into something that it doesn't have the right to be, that it doesn't have the, that's just never going to work.
No.
Trust us, we're stand-up comics. And when they're like, hey, can you do 45 minutes? You're like, sure.
Like, did you just ask me if I need $250? Because that's what I heard. Like, yeah, I'll fucking stretch that time. Let's do it.
Yeah, like the first time they ask you, you're like, oh yeah, totally, I can do 45, 50 minutes, no problem. And then you're like, ugh. And then so I get it. But you don't have the luxury of talking to the crowd in the middle of it, you know what I mean? So so where are you guys from? Oh, cool.
Is that a line you want to try, or have you seen any
funnies?
Yeah,
which one of you guys is drunk enough to come on stage? I ran out of material 20 minutes into a 60 minute set. And it was because timing, you don't realize what pacing is when you do it the first time. And then when you burn through the material, if people aren't laughing at it, you're like, oh fuck, I have 40 minutes left on the stage. And now
no one likes me.
Yeah. Yeah. They already hate me 20 minutes after 20 minutes of my material. So they're going to fucking love me when I talk to them. Yeah. That's going to be great.
So how can our listeners and us and anybody that I talk to help Vampire right now? And when can we see, like, what are the plans?
Yeah, totally. So right now, the place to find out all about Vampire is www.vampiremovie.com. So that's our crowdfunding campaign that is still active. We are currently past our initial fundraising goal, which means we like can pay an editor, a color grade artist, a score, you know, someone to do the music score, like the essentials, as anyone who's made a film knows, that are really expensive, but absolutely have to happen in order for the movie to be any good. And they are like another handful of professionals. It's another handful of jobs. It's not, you know, we've achieved filming this movie, but now we have to stitch it together and polish it and turn it into what we know it can be. So we do have the initial goal met, which is awesome. So we're going to be able to finish Vampire. Now we're fundraising to do things like film festivals and that next level of actually getting it out to people, which people don't realize how expensive that is. And we really have, like, the way I like to put it is that we've put gas in a really nice car and we drove that car just about as far as we can now. And we're kind of on the side of the road with a sign that says, please help us, go to www.vampiremovie.com. We've got a really nice car, but it's out of gas. We're not asking, you know, for you guys to help us push a junker. It really is like a nice fucking car. It's out of gas. And if you guys don't help us, we're going to be pushing it the rest of the way there just by hand. We're going to be out there doing it no matter what. So for us, it's like this crowdfunding campaign is a way for us to get this movie out to you guys by like this fall. I mean, if we could actually make some of these goals, that's not unrealistic. If we can't, finishing it will happen and we can do a local premiere and get it out to anyone who donates to the Indiegogo campaign. You can purchase Blu-rays, you can get a digital copy, whatever floats your boat. But until we get that next level, it's just really hard to know how we're going to distribute this bad boy.
Exactly.
Get the notoriety for it so we could even get a distribution deal that is good and allows it to be out there more accessibly.
Yeah, so right now it's come to Eugene, Oregon in October 2024 for a local premiere, or donate to the Indiegogo for some of the other ways to get either a Blu-ray or a digital download. And, you know, from there, we're just kind of trying to be as scrappy and resourceful as possible. It'd be kind of awesome to never fully have to sell Vampire and to do a bit of a self-release and maintain as much as possible of the ownership and then sort of hold out and prove how good it is to the world before making a deal with a streaming service and just really getting just because no one's going to respect us. You know, they're going to try to just give us a penny for it and, you know, either just take credit for it or just even bury it and walk along. And so that's the world we live in. And yeah, the Indiegogo and the local premiere are the for sure ways.
Yeah, we deal with a lot of indie maker that's the hard part of it all. You know what I mean? Like, you can get the movie made, but then, like, then what do I do? You know what I mean?
That's whole other problem.
So, honestly, it really is. Because it's such a community. And, like, even just doing these podcasts with you guys, with any of the other ones that we've done as well, we've met so many just lovely humans who love the same things that we do. Like, I'm kind of the horror fanatic of the two of us. But ultimately, like, we love movies. Like, that's bottom line. We want a good story, you know? And I think that really unites most people who enjoy this form of media or just life, like, in general, I guess. Like,
sure.
So I just, like, I think really if we could get this out to the fans, to even go to some horror cons, to get it out to the people who would appreciate it, then large in part, I think they could really help us, like, get the fire stoked even higher. Like, people respond to that. If people love it, they want to see it, and they know there's an audience, they're going to stream it.
Right.
So really, like, all the love that you can give Vampire at this point, you know, free us releasing it, but I mean, post us releasing it as well. If any amount of hype that you can help us get is going to improve our reach, it's going to improve the image of Vampire and ultimately turn something that really was like made with the budget that you would make this movie in the 80s. Like, we made it for like well under $50,000. So
I'm super excited about it, and I run the social, or at least Instagram, so I'll be posting about it a lot.
Thank you so much, man.
Until it comes out, and then we'll probably talk about it more and have you on and stuff. But fucking awesome. How do you guys think you do at the Sinister Six?
Oh, we're ready.
Let's go.
You guys ready? Everybody cool with that?
Yeah. Let's do it.
All right. I got to find them now, but all right. New Sinister Six. I'm going to go with the fun first one. Chucky or Pinhead?
Pinhead.
Pinhead for sure. Yeah, 100%.
Oh, all right.
The original Clive Barker screenplay is everything.
Angel to some, demon to most.
Yeah, dog.
You guys are both emphatically with Pinhead.
I love it.
Yeah.
Okay. I do have a question though.
Yeah.
Hellraiser as an entire series, or Child's Play as an entire series?
Oh yeah. Fuck.
Yeah. Are we including the new Hellraiser?
Yes.
And also the new Child's Play, and all the
Child's Play stuff.
Yeah.
Yep.
Did you guys not like the new Hellraiser?
I didn't. I definitely.
I loved
didn't.
It.
Really? I loved it.
They're not going to have us back.
Oh no! Of course we will. I mean,
what I didn't like about it was primarily the main like villain guy who got the sort of accordion thing put in him.
Yeah.
I felt like he was really just kind of flat and not what I wanted in the movie.
Yeah,
I didn't like modifications. The outfits were almost like it's like gore, but like make it high fashion. And yeah. I was like, what? This is not the point. Like,
I can fully see not liking it from a like if you're going
aesthetically,
like I liked it because I'm kind of like that. Like, I'm like, I do like seeing different artists' interpretations of the same thing. And sometimes I think it's worse. It was like the Friday the 13th reboot where they tried to make it like the original ones, and like that clearly wasn't going to happen. And like that was a Michael Bay may not be the person to make something like, you know what I mean? Like,
let's make Jason Voorhees a decathlete. Like, let's go ahead and make him sprint and do archery.
They probably had to talk him out of making him a transformer. So what I'm saying is like, Michael Bay stick to doing what Michael Bay should do. You know what I mean? Like, make big, huge, like that's what you're good for. But I didn't mind it. But if I had to pick between both series myself, I would go Child's Play as an entire franchise.
Yeah, I feel like that one guy got introduced to a little younger. So it kind of like, it still like holds a little place in my heart, you know, that's kind of warm, even though like I love Hellraiser's like writing though. That's
for sure. Yeah, the first two. So like by far, some of the best.
It's almost unfair to put both franchises against each other as a whole though, because if we're being completely honest, 75% of the Hellraiser movies are not even really Hellraiser movies, and also on top of that, they're dog shit. Yeah. So like, you know,
but I'm talking about because it used to be, what was it, Jason or Freddy, and they're both kind of supernatural, and the other was Michael Myers and Leatherface, and they're not supernatural. So I was trying to match up. That one, like, who would you pick there?
I love the one that you have now, first of all. Still great. But I think for us, we'd be divided.
Yeah,
Michael Myers, Leatherface. 100%.
Yeah.
He's my boy.
I'm big on the like lore, like the implied magic and mythology. Like, even if it's kind of thin, that shit is always like, I'm just a big nerd for stuff like that, and always have been. For it passes over to horror really well too. And like Chucky has some of that too, but for me, Hellraiser is almost like the greatest of all the horror films of like, whoa, these extra dimensional beings are here. Mm-hmm.
Yeah,
like,
yeah. That's pretty fucking rad. Yeah.
I feel like the Leatherface, you know, of it all is, I love the brutality. And it's honestly a franchise that I just really shouldn't love so much, I feel, because it has such a focus on just the brutality and not so much on the writing from what I've seen, which is quite a few of them.
Yeah.
So it's just something that I shouldn't love as much as I do, you know? So I think that's why he's like my boy.
And as a writer myself, I understand liking, because Leatherface is actually an interesting character because he's actually sort of sympathetic in his brutality, because like there's something like he's a victim himself, and you know what I mean, like he's a member, he's like an extension of the cruelty of the family and not the cruelty himself. And so I think that is really fascinating part of like Leatherface, like especially in the later movies where you're like, oh man, like I'm kind of like pro Leatherface.
The one when he's against the cops.
I really love when they play with like the sort of the repressed sexuality of Leatherface, like in
absolutely
one. Oh my God. And also some in Texas Chainsaw 3D, they do some of that too.
Yep.
It's
fun.
Yeah, really love that. Is Bigfoot real?
Oh, hell yeah, dude. I haven't seen one yet. I probably by now. Yeah, I
so he's like, I'm not sure.
I like to believe.
No,
it's a very Eugene question.
I mean, like, you know, part of me wants to say yes, just for the cryptid lovers out there, and like, I believe in aliens and shit. So like, I'm not coming at it from like a black and white perspective either. So I'm like, if I want to leave people feeling like there are vampires in the hills of the Cascade, right. Yeah, Sasquatches out there too.
Fuck right. All right, Zoe first. What movie would you remake?
Anything.
Oh, I had one.
Oh man.
Oh, I do have one.
Yeah. Man, that's a tough one. Any movie that I could remake. Do you have one?
I have one. Okay. I've been thinking first. For a while, just about The Ring and about how interesting it is to me that there's so many screens in our life and that she comes through the screen. Just that, basically. Just honestly, but I've been just playing with all the moments in modern life, and I'm a big fan of like what I view as this modern wave of horror that's really referential towards like everyday settings or like everyday impulses, something like The Menu or like Raw or like It Follows or even Talk to Me, where it like just throws you into this vibe of like, oh, we've all been at a party like this, but now it's getting into this horror.
Sure.
So I kind of have been playing with just ideas around like screens in your everyday life and what a really like interpreted like new interpretation of the Ring could be, mostly based just off of that screen and media based horror.
I love that, because you named a bunch of movies that I love except The Ring, so I would 100% love to see The Ring remade in the vein of those other ones. Yeah,
can you imagine her crawling out of the giant screen in Times Square?
What about the Vegas like, one,
dude? Yeah.
Yeah,
Vegas dude. Globe or
the
something.
The fucking
whatever.
Sphere, the sphere, yeah. The MGM sphere. Yeah.
Oh my god.
I'm down with that shit.
That's really good. I really like to tell original narratives, and even after doing like this vampire piece and like having this kind of like, you know, childhood fairy tale, and you're kind of rolling it into something a little more horrible because in reality the source material is actually a fucking horror story to begin with.
Yeah.
So like I love that element of what we've already done, but I think if I was going to recreate something that already exists, it would be kind of like Malachi's answer, to be like an addition to one of these amazing franchises, you know, like that I've fallen in love with. And I think maybe it's because we just talked about it, but I have felt this way before because I love the original Hellraiser screenplay so much. The writing and the imagery and the way that the writer brings you into that world in the screenplay, because it did start as a novel, but the way that that document was created, there are parts of it that are lost in the movie. And there's so much that is gained from that, from the wax transformation of Frank into, like there's so much that honestly, I don't even know that I could do better if I tried. But that's one of those that like, I've thought to myself, like, wouldn't I love to do my version of these sexual sadists from outer space who come and terrorize whoever finds this weird kink box? Like, I think I could really play with the themes of Hellraiser a lot. It would just be hard for me to not write a fucking Texas Chainsaw Massacre because I love them so much. That's the one that I would have something real to say, you know, and something maybe that I feel I understand about Clive Barker's original intention, and maybe parts of that I would have liked to see more strongly in like that movie after reading the screenplay itself. But that's the best I can do. And it's really one that doesn't even need to be remade. So hope that's
really those are really great good answers.
Great answers.
Yeah. All right. If you could erase one movie, Malachite, what would it be? Any like, movie from existence.
Oh,
doesn't have to be horror.
The Thanos snap. It's just gone.
The most disrespectful that they've ever been. The one that comes to my mind is the M. Night Shyamalan Avatar: Last Airbender.
Mm. Oh yeah, that's a good answer.
I think he'd appreciate you doing that.
Yeah. For all of us. Like, I never made that movie. I don't know what you're talking about.
Yeah, what?
I this is gonna be unpopular. I mean, I just know already. Right. This is gonna be an unpopular answer, but
good.
Everyone's seen Bill and Ted's Bogus Journey. Because that's the, like, I've watched that growing up. There's a special place in my heart for that fucked up movie, but that shit gave me nightmares, bro, because who wants to see evil Bill and Ted? I'm like, that's like the opposite of what, like, the fans of Bill and Ted wanted, I mean, to me. So the fact that he, like, they go through this, like, hellscape of all of these really weird, like really deep-seated, not explored in the first movie very well at all things, it kind of did feel like it jumped the shark a little bit for me. But mm-hmm. then you get Death playing bass guitar, and I can't lose that. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, I wouldn't actually erase it because of that one piece. Is that, that one character. Thing. But
I like that.
It's weird, and I loved it, but woo.
So I liked it when I watched it as a kid. I rewatched it not too long ago. I was showing my kids it, and it was really bad. So yeah, I'm actually
it
like
ages poorly.
It ages poorly.
It ages really poorly. Yeah, the treatment of the princess is Max. Important.
Yes, yes.
Hey, listen. If Max wants to be on the fucking podcast, we let Max on the
my
podcast.
Cat won't shut up.
Yeah, I can hear Max in the background. We leave Max alone.
I can.
His name's Mad Max Fury Road.
Yeah,
it's really good.
Because I won't sidle him with Mel Gibson, but I love all the Mad Max. Anyway, Alien or Aliens?
Oh, for me, definitely Alien. Actually, so I go back and I watch Aliens, and I'm like, is this the most okay? So let me explain before you judge me. But I watch Aliens, and I'm like, is this just like a super cliche action film? Because I think most of the action films I watched were all ripping off Aliens. Like, I think that on some level, yeah, my interpretation of Aliens was like, it's interesting, but it didn't come off as unique to me. And I think it's because I was wrong and I'd been watched all the things that probably stole too much from it. But for me, Alien is just as good as it gets with like the mystery and the lore and the sci-fi and the horror.
And the cat.
And the cat.
And the cat.
Yeah, of course.
Jonesy.
But yeah, do you guys feel that way about Aliens at all? Is it just like is it?
I do. I have always felt it's a great movie. It's an awesome action horror film. I have a problem with James Cameron just in general, and I do. I think it's an action film more than it's a horror.
Yeah.
And I think the first one is flat out horror. Like that shit is a creature feature with and it's got that fucking claustrophobia that's unmatched, like in almost any movie. It's fucking wonderful to me. But again, like as soon as I watch Alien, I do throw on Aliens, and then I watch them all. I mean, I love the entire up until Covenant. I loved Covenant. Nobody else here did.
I did. But, I love Covenant.
No, okay, good. Ryan hates it.
I hate it. I actually didn't finish. I could barely finish Prometheus, and I didn't finish Covenant.
Oh, I love Prometheus,
which is very rare for me. Very rare for me just to give up.
It is. It is.
Like, yeah, but Fassbender's character was like such a cliche himself. Like every movie needs a robot that's like learning about humanity and all this crap. And it's like, come on. It's like both Prometheus and Covenant. They're like, let's take every sci-fi cliche and we're gonna throw it in a bag and just shake it up. You know what I mean? And like, and then we'll see what comes out. I love Alien. I enjoy Aliens more.
Hmm.
If that makes sense, I might respect Alien more, but man, I watched Alien so many times and I freaking love it. And yeah, it might be like some cliche action and stuff in it, but it's done so well. And it's so like, and Ripley is such a badass and Paul Reiser's so good in it. He doesn't get any love for that role. You know what I mean? Like, and I don't know. Like, I just think it's like, and if you see it like more, like on a better print of it where you can actually like see where they didn't like tune down all the darkness, and you can see all the things like the sets are so, all so, it's so heavily Geigered out, and like so everything is just like so beautiful. And then like, you know, it's like Ripley at the end kind of causes a problem, because she like, we don't talk about it a lot, but like the queen lets her go so she doesn't torch the eggs. But Ripley just goes ahead and torches the eggs anyways out of spite. So there's like a weird little, and then I don't know, like call me crazy, but the battle scene with like the forklift robot thing and the alien is like one of like the coolest scenes in movie history. It really is. So
really,
I
like Transformers. It's great.
Yeah, exactly. And it's just like, so it's hard for me to like I understand that it like on like a certain level, like maybe I should like other movies more, but like I have quoted Aliens like I used to work in kitchens for a long time, because of course I did, but like and Game Over Man, or why didn't you put her in charge, or like any of that shit is like quotable. It's like quotable. So many times, so much, so it's hard for me to like honestly sit here and say like I don't absolutely love Aliens. So that's my opinion.
You know what, we won't ask you to do that. Okay. We make you split the like main, honestly, right? Touched on my biggest flaw with Aliens is the lighting. It is the strobing. It's like at some point it literally became just like hard for me to finish, and it's because it's just too dark and also too bright, and that kind of a thing probably should be thought of a little more. But it's also one of those like sets, and you're in a collapsing spaceship, and how many times was that even done before then? It's one of those things that you almost don't know until you do it wrong a little bit, and then you're like, I could have lifted the contrast a little there.
And so yeah. It was clearly like something, a choice made in like deep post-production to like turn down the lighting and like adjust it, because like I have one of the million different versions of it on like on a Blu-ray that I got, and it's bright, like the background is like solid and you can see everything and everything, and you're like, why did you try to hide like $1 billion in set work? Right. I mean, because it's there. It's all there, you know what I mean? And like, it's not, but I think they decided at some point to make it a darker movie, maybe to make it more horror feel or whatever like that. But there was no reason for it to be a darker movie, because like they're in a spaceship that would have probably been well lit, you know what I mean? Like, so like, anyways,
all the places. I mean, yeah, fun fact, I don't know if you guys know this, but I think it's fucking hilarious. And I love Sigourney Weaver and she's a beautiful woman, but I don't know if you guys knew that they like had to airbrush out all of her pubes in the first movie.
Yeah,
I thought that was so funny. Like, talk about a weird post-production decision to just go spend like thousands of dollars, even though she's on a spaceship.
Yeah,
right.
What the shit do you think she's doing up there? Like, right. I feel like there's a little bit of that for the whole franchise.
Yeah. Like
last step.
Do you really think Sigourney's up there like shaving her pubes in a fucking space station? Right. Like, come on. Like,
shit would be, I mean, they probably have a lot of downtime.
Like, that's how anti-grav works.
Right. I'm not pulling out a razor in anti-gravity. Get the fuck out of here.
All right, last one.
Yeah.
Basement or attic?
Like, what's scarier in general?
However you want to interpret it.
What do you prefer?
I've lived in basements for the majority of my life.
Yeah.
I'm going to go attic. I thought fucking fuck.
I like that. Moving up.
Yeah.
It's like the basement is safe to me.
This is my king. I have a movie that I'm in the process of writing that's called Basement Cousin, and it is a horror. And so I'm gonna go basement.
Awesome.
I want basement cousin.
I want to see Basement Coven tonight.
Wait,
basement
homie,
coven, you know? Or cousin?
Cousin.
Yeah.
Oh god, that sounds so good.
Like, I just want the opening to that to be like somebody opening up the basement door and be like, who the fuck left Jeremy down here? And how long has he been down there?
Jeremy. He's All right. You fucking killed it.
Yeah, you guys nailed that one.
Oh, dang.
Thank you, guys.
Nice.
Absolutely. I'm so fucking excited for Vampire.
Seriously.
I can't even, like, begin to tell you. And thank you. Like, just this conversation, and I knew it would too, because just judging by your enthusiasm on paper, like, oh, I cannot fucking wait to see this movie. So
yeah, congratulations. No way it's not gonna
kick ass. Yeah, and we'll do everything we can to make sure as many people see it.
Thank you.
Awesome. Yeah, we'll push the fuck out of it. We'll tell people in like all over the place. Like, and that's kind of funny too, because like all of us have like kind of roots in a lot of different places, and it helps that like Ryan's on the West Coast, I'm from the West Coast, Grandma's from the East Coast, and like this area too. So like, we, you know, this type of shit is cool, because when we hear something like this and we hear filmmakers that are truly passionate about something that they made, like that's when our juices start flowing and we're like, we're gonna fucking tell everybody. Like, yeah. That's what we do. Like,
thank you so much.
We're all part of the family now.
Yeah, you've joined the vampire family.
Fucking awesome. We're doing recommendations now?
Recommendations. Yeah. Graham,
I'll jump in.
Oh, yeah. Okay,
I got No Man, a DC hardcore band. They just dropped their new album called Glitter and Spit. It's a little metal tinged hardcore, but it's fucking just fantastic. I don't know how I missed it. It came out earlier this week. And I'm already a big fan of No Man, but this Glitter and Spit, fucking incredible. A band called Fucked Up released a song called Cops. I'll let you decide if it's celebratory or anti.
We're gonna guess that's not too pro cop.
No, they actually just released like 2 7-inches with 4 songs. Fucking, they're all like super punk rock and hardcore. Fucked Up can do basically anything, and they've gone like back to like their punk roots for these last couple songs, which is, I love. Third band, it's a fun one, Restrictor Plate. It's slam metal, which is a lot like the Maggot Death, like Sanguisuga Bog is probably the progression of that. Slam Tona 500. It's all NASCAR themed slam metal.
What?
And, wow. They've got a song on there called Earnhardt Stomp. It's fucking awesome. For TV.
God, I love how weird music is.
It's the best. The for TV, I got 8 Body Problem. It's fucking awesome. About 4 episodes in, I have no idea what's fucking going on. But it's pretty rad. And then Traitors Australia just started their new season. I'm a big fucking fan of Traitors. It's the US one is hosted by Alan Cumming, and it's fucking incredible. He wears amazing outfits, and they're in a Scottish castle, and it's a bunch of celebs from reality shows that are, it's basically a murder mystery. It's fucking amazing. It's on Peacock, but also on Peacock, they just finished their UK second season, and they just started their Australian second season. So I don't see a time when there aren't Traitors in my future, and I'm pretty happy about it. So those are my recommendations this week. Jonas?
Okay. So for watching stuff, movies, I've actually been seeing stuff in the theaters, but I already recommended Immaculate last week. It's fucking great. I'm like super into Sydney Sweeney as an actress now too, because like I had only really seen her just based off of the stuff that she was popular on, and I didn't know how into horror she actually was, and Immaculate like really shows it, because like that was her movie. So I already recommended it last week, but I'm recommending it this week too. Go see it before it's out of theaters. But the majority of my recommendations this week are going to be physical media, because I haven't listened to shit this week at all. But since we were talking about various different things with types of movies and types of horror, 2 different ones. This one is from Raven Banner. It's Victor Crowley. So it is the 4th in the Hatchet series. Hatchet is one of my favorite series because it's just absolutely off the fucking wall, bananas, crazy gore, fucking all practical effects. They're bear trapping people's heads. They're fucking just everything nasty shit. And then on the other half of it, also from Raven Banner, this one is probably one of my favorite narrative horror films of all time. Talk about like character development and like writing out a fucking character. That is The Autopsy of Jane Doe.
Fuck, which right. is
a very, very awesome physical media release from them. So you got the sleeve, and then underneath the sleeve, you got all the guts. And since we were talking about this one, this is probably my favorite physical media thing that I own. And that is the Hellraiser Quartet of Torment. So it's the first 4 films. And it is just, it's one of the coolest releases that I've ever gotten. It's from Arrow Video. And it's got the Hellraiser Bloodline work print in it as well. And the work print for Hellraiser Bloodline is so much better. Like, and it's hard, like, it's hard to not be better because part four sucked, but the work print is a completely different film. It's completely different and it's so much better. So if you're into Hellraiser, the first four are arguably the only really watchable ones. And this set is pretty much perfect. They're all in 4K except for the work print, which is still high def, but it's like I said, it's fantastic. So if you're into physical media, that one I would highly, highly, highly recommend grabbing it. That's all I got. Ryan, what do you got?
Oh, let's see. I'm gonna recommend the Dave Attell Hot Cross Buns special.
Yeah,
That's super fun. Dave Attell
called delivery people third responders.
Yeah,
it was the best.
Mo ketchups.
Brian Simpson's Live from the Mothership special is incredible as well. He's I was on a show with him a bunch of years ago, right after he kind of broke with his Wu-Tang Clan joke that was on the David Spade show and all that stuff. And he's such a good dude. And it's nice to see him getting the attention and the specials he deserves. And then friend of the show and personal friend Kyle Kinane just released Dirt Nap. And yeah, that's
a great name.
It's so good and so appropriate for him. And that's on YouTube. So just go check that out. And then watch the Bray Wyatt special on Peacock. Watch, I've been watching Evil Lives Here. I work at home and I'll watch like little segments of it. And it is a 11 season series of true crime documentaries and about people who live with like a serial killer or like their father was a murderer or something like that. And it's a bummer, but it's fun. I don't know. Like, I don't know. Like, so's
the Bray Wyatt doc.
Right. It's a lot of that, So, yeah,
I feel like that's kind of like dad kills people, but also dad kills people.
right. So anyways, on to y'all.
I recommend the, punk rock band Leftover Crack.
Mm-hmm.
Leftover Crack, super fire, check them out. These old ninja games called Tenchu, like Wrath of Heaven or Shadow of Darkness is the one that I first played as a kid. Fucking love those. They're really good stealth games. I thought I had one more. I do a lot of intermittent fasting, so like just skip a meal sometimes. You feel more energetic after not eating occasionally.
He's not wrong.
I think that's all I got.
I had a stand-up bit about it. I was like, where I'm from, that's just called being poor. Anyways,
how do you think I learned?
I'm gonna start with Wizards, which is a really great animated movie from the 80s that's very much so about, it's definitely for adults. But it's got like really great themes of like science and modernity versus magic. And it's told in a very like high fantasy land. And I love that. A big fan of fantasy. It's definitely my favorite, or at least one of my favorite genres. I'm also going to recommend one of my favorite singers, Edith Piaf. And she's a French singer. And a lot of people know her music. Like it's pretty famous, but she's just got a really amazing story, and she really did come from like a pretty down in the dumps place in the world and managed to really live a life that she had no regrets. And I think that's just a really like beautiful story, and I've just really bonded with her music. And then lastly, I'm gonna recommend another movie, because what the heck else are we doing here?
You sure?
But actually, Malachi brought it up earlier today, and it's called Raw, and it's a French film.
Oh, it is.
I mean, I'm into anything with cannibalism, so like maybe I'm easily pleased. So like, watch it, see what you think. It's like kind of even lightcore as far as
it's fucking amazing. It's incredibly beautiful and fucked up and awesome movie. That director is, she's fantastic.
Yeah, the ending really slaps and it's really weird. And so I like, yeah, I really highly recommend making it to Act Three in that one.
Did you see Titan?
Which one?
Titan. It's the movie she did afterwards. Oh. It's kind of about fucking cars, but it's way more than that. I recommend that. And Malachite, if you've probably heard them, but Morning Glory. Do you listen to them at all? Yeah.
I'll write it down.
Ezra Kyer. It's Ezra Kyer from Leftover Crack.
Oh,
it's,
cool.
I think an actually even better, like it's very like personal and just really fantastic. They've got like four albums. The last two, Poets Are Our Heroes and War Psalms, I think, are fucking dope.
Cool, you know, man. You know what's really funny that you just said that it's kind of about fucking cars? Because the reason this makes me laugh is because Titan or Titan or however the fuck it's pronounced, I don't even know. Is it Titan?
But, I think it's Titan.
Yeah. It's like, have you ever seen the movie or heard of the movie Tetsuya the Iron Man?
Yeah.
Okay, so it has similar things like that. There's like some body horror. There's like some true crime-ish stuff. There's also car fucking. There's also like it's a wild movie, but fuck,
it's
is it
absolute
good.
Insanity. But it's very, very. If you like Raw, you'll absolutely dig it.
And also, have you seen the Soska sisters' version of Rabid?
Rabid.
Rabid, yeah.
No, I haven't.
You should
check that out.
Yeah. Okay. Cannibalism, it sounds like cannibalism.
It definitely has some cannibalism in it. and the Soska sisters fucking rule. So their whole catalog's awesome, but specifically Rabid, it's a Cronenberg remake, right?
Yep.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Oh, it's a fucking it's a great one. So
And if you are into cannibalism, I'm listening to a podcast on one of our recent guest, Tina Horn. She has a podcast called Why Are People Into That? And I'm listening to the cannibalism one with Empress Wu, who's a dominatrix here in the city, I believe. It's fascinating.
Wow. That's actually a really interesting perspective. I'm really like, I'm probably going to look that up, man.
Yeah. Tina Horn and Why Are People Into That, I think, is the name of the podcast.
I'm also a cannibal fan and currently watching Hannibal on the show. And I just ordered all of the Hannibal book, a whole box set of the books. I read Silence of the Lambs a bunch of years ago, but I never read any of the other ones. And
I love Silence of the Lambs.
Yeah. Yeah, and exactly, and I'm kind of getting into the whole like Hannibal lore, and I really enjoy the show, so I am going to now read all of the books. So apparently, we're all cannibal
enthusiasts.
Yeah, like for
dinner.
Exactly. No, I'll tell you, in the Hannibal show, like the food they're making, because as a food guy, like the food they're making, I'm like, you know, I might sit down to it and then maybe like, yeah, this is people. And I'd be like, just don't tell me. And I'd just be like, you know,
I feel like Ray Liotta in Hannibal, in the movie Hannibal, is probably like, man, I do taste pretty fucking good. Like,
right. You know, like, you know, the alive people, they say that there was a lot of holdouts on the eating of the people. But the second that the meat started cooking, that they figured out how to cook it, the second the smell hit the people, they were like, yeah, I'm in.
Like, let's do it.
I read like the Donner Party autobiography book. Yeah. They give that to you in Alaska at like fifth grade, and like I think that's probably where it started for me.
Yeah,
that's what fucked me up. Like, not even a lot of movies, just
the Donner Party episode series on Last Podcast on the Left is one of my favorite things of all time, because like, you've heard how terrible the Donner Party is until you dig into it, you're like, oh my god, it was way worse than you think it is. Like, it was so utterly awful. Like, they left, like some of them left to go find people, and it was called like The Hike of Forlorn Hope or something like that. Like, how do you fucking write that? You know what I mean?
Fuck that hike.
I'm not going to, just eat me. I'm done. Like, life isn't that like rad. It's like they didn't even have smartphones and like Facebook threads to troll and shit back then. Like, what? Why did you want to keep going? What, to die of dysentery in 7 months? Come on, like,
no, dude, fucking fire whoever named that hike. For fuck's sake.
Like, anyone want to sign up for the Hike of Forlorn Hope? No one.
No takers. Okay, that's
the people that signed up for it. There's probably like a psychiatrist on fucking set. There was like, okay, those three, you guys, you're my fucking patients now. Like, you should not want to go on that hike. Real quick before we wrap this up, I have a question for you, Zoe. Since you grew up in Alaska, could you imagine a horror film set in the city in Alaska that's just a building, just that city in Alaska? Like, yeah, how the fuck?
That would be so amazing. I know what you're talking about. I have a fucking movie. Don't give people that idea. Okay. Don't give that away. Like, I saw this fucking meme about it that was like, does Wes Anderson know that there's a city in, you know, Alaska that people all live in one building? And I was like, damn it, it's getting out. But that is a real place. And it's for very good reason, because obviously, like, in Alaska, your pipes freeze and all kinds of shit if you only have like a little house out there. So yeah, I have plans.
Good. Good. You should. Wes Anderson, don't touch it. Don't fucking touch that town. You can direct it,
but I'm all right.
Yeah. Good. It's in good hands. That's good. I'm happy with this.
Yes. I'll dedicate it to you, man. It's all for you, Jonas.
Well, thank you so much for joining us and for putting in for the we are fans first amongst we are fans of these sorts of movies, and I'm just so appreciative of the people like putting these movies out and doing this thing. So thank you so much for making this happen for us and as the fans, you know, and we're really looking forward to it, and please come back when this drops and let us know however we can promote it. And so I also want to thank everybody worldwide for listening. Oh wait, Graham wants to give out. So we have a Patreon. We have all the way from $1 to $20.
Army of the Goddamned.
Army of the Goddamned. Mm-hmm. You can join if you go to Patreon at AGHP666. You can find our Patreon and throw us some money. I need money. I gotta buy things, like these polar soda waters I'm drinking ain't free, you know what I mean? And like, and I need two per episode. So like, if you throw some money our way, I'm hydrated. Do you want me to dehydrate, folks? Who's in the Army of the Goddamn, Graham?
We got Michael, Drew, Stephanie, Katie, Chris, Alan, Bacon Bits, Angela, Jasmine, Jason, Jake, Vivian, Ron, Kristen, Manny, Coleman, Ryan, Jared, Michelle, and Brandon.
The real ones.
The realest.
Yeah. Realest.
Mm-hmm. Now, even if you're not a member of our Patreon, I still love you. I don't know about Graham, but
I do.
But you know, United States,
just a slight bit more love.
No, I slept on it. I fully love it.
Okay. Yeah.
We support people of all financial situations on this show, Graham. United States, of course, in first place, because you always are, but on this list, but the real heroes are UK, still solidly coming in second place, Canada, third place, New Zealand, fourth place, and this is the big one, Australia has overtaken Germany.
Whoa.
Oh, shit.
Australia, you're back. Australia, you were such a heavy hitter for such a long time, and you kind of like listen, I understand you're busy down there. You got battle death creatures all the time. You got like
the spiders alone.
Spiders alone. I don't even know if Australia realized how like into Australia America got for a long time, but people will still say that's not a knife. This is a knife like six times a week. So like, and so just know that we'd love you. Thank you. Germany, you're still right in there. You have slipped a little bit past, but Sweden, you and Germany are now tied. So Sweden coming up. Hey, if you're from Sweden, reach out to us. If you are a Swedish horror movie maker or you know somebody, send them our way. We will fully have you on. Turks and Caicos Island still coming in strong.
No idea why.
No idea. India, Mexico. God, I fucking love Mexico. Where in Mexico are we being listened to? Baja, Hidalgo, Oaxaca, Quintana Roo, Mexico City. Oh my God, Sonora and Puebla. Holy mackerel. And Oaxaca, man, I love Oaxaca. And Oaxaca, your cheese. fucking dynamite. So anyways, thank you everybody who listens to the world worldwide. We love you so much. We love everybody. Please, if you are struggling, please reach out to us. We all need to do this together. We need every single horror fan active and healthy and happy, and so we can someday run this world and kick all those losers out of there, right? Mm-hmm. Yep. And, if you're struggling, please reach out. Take care of yourself. Love yourself. We love you. And until we see you again, start some fires and break some glass. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Bye.